What's up, everyone? Welcome into the All 22 podcast. You got Chris and Ray back again. Ray, we are past the divisional round of the playoffs. We are down to the conference round of the NFL playoffs, and it was a pretty exciting weekend. We got some great performances. I do want to talk through it with you, but first off, as always, how are you?
Doing fantastic. This is always bittersweet because only four NFL teams remaining means that there's not much time left in the season. But these games matter more and more, and that just means we're closer to draft season. So there's always something to look forward to, always, except like the third week of May. There's just nothing going on like after late May. But yeah, man, I'm doing great. We were treated to some really good football all weekend. So got to be doing great.
Doing great. Exactly. And you know what? We're in a time where there's just so much to talk about. There's absolutely just nonstop content. The NFL does a great job of that. We talk about it every offseason. They know how to fill a void, and they've done that to give something for everyone. But let's start off again talking about the games. And kind of to no surprise, Kansas City beats Houston Texans. And, you know, Kelce just wakes up, right? Like Travis Kelce woke up from his slumber. It reminded me of like what Gronk used to do, right? Kind of take the entire season to warm up, right? We don't want to get injured. We just got to make it to the playoffs. And then once the playoffs begin, I'm going to step up in a big, big way and make an impact for my team. He had a 91.1 receiving grade, 117 yards, a touchdown, and then 59 yards after contact. So huge game for him. But really in Kansas City, the defense is the story. Eight players had a grade of 68 or higher. Chris Jones, one sack, one hit, one hurry, 79.0 grade. Charles Omenihu, 77.5. And then Trent McDuffie, 74.4. Their defense has just been lights out, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's another game where Mahomes doesn't put up huge numbers like we had come to expect for years from Mahomes, especially this time of year. And it doesn't matter because people don't talk about how good this defense is. We do, and several other corners of the internet do. But for the most part, a lot of people are just overlooking how good this defensive unit is overall at every level. They have good play on the defensive line. They have good play at the second level at linebacker, and their secondary is playing well. So all in all, it's everyone talks about Mahomes and his numbers and Kelce, which is great. Kelce's done the load management thing. The NBA is struggling with that, but apparently the Chiefs are pulling it off with Kelce. And but again, it's really the defense that is the glue that's holding this whole thing together and is really what's closing out these football games. Regardless of the discussion on the offensive side of the ball, it's the defense that's closing out these games.
And exciting performances if you are a Houston fan as well, because your young guys, your young stars really showed up. Will Anderson had two sacks of his own, one QB hit, an 81.9 grade, but it's really Nico Collins and CJ Stroud who have looked just absolutely fantastic together, both with an 85 plus grade. You really just got to think if they shore up that offensive line next year, right? Build up that interior. This is a different team. This is a different team, and it's going to be a contender. The more CJ Stroud gets experience, the better. Okay, Washington. This is the biggest surprise, right? Washington beats the Detroit Lions. And you know what? In reality, Detroit's studs stepped up in a big way as well. So Penei Sewell, 90.1. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 80.3. Jahmyr Gibbs, 78.9. Frank Ragnow, 74.4. And then the surprise was Christian Mahogany, 92.2. And I think in his like fifth game that he's played in, just looked absolutely incredible. So Detroit got what it needed from its role players and its star role players. But in reality, it came down to Jared Goff just not being enough. 45.5 grade for him with four turnover-worthy plays. You know, I think Detroit in general is just asking themselves, could we do it, right? And I think that's really what's happened with their coaching as well, right? It's like Ben Johnson probably said, hey, I'm going to give it one more year last year. We're going to try to do this, but this is kind of it, right? I'll know after this year with the talent that we have, if we can't do it with Jared Goff, we can't do it at all. It's probably likely Ben Johnson. Oh, Ben Johnson left. We're going to talk about that later. But Aaron Glenn is going to leave as well, it sounds like. So both coordinators leaving. I think they gave it a shot, right? But maybe the truth is Jared Goff just isn't good. He's not that tier of quarterback to make it at the next level. But guess who is? It's Jaden Daniels with a 79.9 grade. Has looked absolutely electric, right? This is a guy that in the offseason we were talking about. We're not sure he's going to be able to step up in this NFL level and be able to do the things he was doing in college. I think he's done more. I think he's done absolutely more than what we expected. it doesn't, it, you know, it absolutely helps. He has Austin Eckler, pound for pound, the strongest guy in the NFL, 90.8 grade from him. Terry McLaurin, 77.7. So love to see that from that offense. I'm ecstatic for them, right? Like, this is so exciting for that team. And we have an NFC East rematch going into the championship round, which is super exciting. We'll get to the Eagles in a minute. But any thoughts from you on that matchup?
Zero turnover-worthy plays from Jaden Daniels. That was the difference. Zero turnover-worthy plays from the rookie quarterback in this game. He did exactly what she asked for. He picked up yards with his legs when he needed to. He made the throws that were there and didn't put the ball in harm's way. Jared Goff, four turnover-worthy plays. That eventually comes to bite you, and that's not even including the obvious Jameson Williams turnover-worthy throw that was a turnover as well. But again, Jaden Daniels doing exactly what you need a young rookie quarterback to do. There's a reason a very small number have made it this far in the playoffs in NFL history while being a rookie, and a reason why none have won the Super Bowl as a rookie quarterback. And it's because it's really hard to do, to not put the ball in harm's way when the stakes are so high and you're playing against the best of the best. And Jaden Daniels found a way to do that, and his team moves on. Sometimes it is just that simple.
It is. It really is. Let's go to Buffalo and Baltimore. So Buffalo beats Baltimore, right? Buffalo D did enough to slow down that electric Baltimore offense. Eight guys had a 65 or higher grade, but guess what? Baltimore's D did even better with nine. I think the true story was just Mark Andrews had probably the game that haunts you for a lifetime, right? Like when Lamar does what he does, right? Early on, he made some mistakes, but when it mattered most, Lamar was Lamar and put together, you know, one of those electric fourth quarter performances. Andrews drops the 2-point conversion to tie the game. He also, fumbled a pass in the fourth quarter that led to a turnover when they were moving the ball down the field. Probably would have been the game-winning drive, considering they came back and scored again. So it's really hard to blame anyone. I think both teams played very well, but it really was, you know, if Lamar limits the turnovers early on, if Andrews doesn't turn the ball over, and if he catches that 2-point conversion, it's a different game. But here we are on Tuesday morning talking about how, you know, at the end of the day, the legacy of Josh Allen, Lamar, Mahomes, Burrow, guys that we talk about as the best quarterbacks in the NFL, comes down to these games. And I think at this point, doesn't matter how good Lamar does, when we get here and we say, this is another year in his age 28 season, in his prime, that Lamar wasn't able to get his team to the next level. How badly does that hurt his legacy?
Boy, that's like a, you almost went meme territory there, first take style, but it's the legacy is still yet to be written. So I'm not going to go there just yet, because at the end of the day, he put the ball in Mark Andrews' hand to send the game potentially to overtime. It's possible he could have gotten, Josh Allen could have driven them down the field for a field goal in the last minute or so, minute and a half, whatever it was, of game time, and done to Lamar what Mahomes has previously done to Josh Allen. At the end of the day, if you want to talk about legacy and all that other stuff, I mean, at the end of the day, both of these guys, until they can come out of Mahomes' shadow, it's Mahomes' world and everyone else is just living in it. If you're talking just the very top level. But what we saw was two elite quarterbacks putting their team in position to play for the chance to go to the Super Bowl. And unfortunately, the Ravens just made one too many mistakes, and they didn't have enough time to make up for it the way that they were able to when Lamar turned the ball over twice early on in the game. They were able to come back from that. They just ran out of time, and we were treated to a great game. It's just another unfortunate, really bitter pill to swallow for the Ravens, but they're not going anywhere. They're going to be right back in the mix next year as well. And Lamar's got plenty of time to get over the hump. I shouldn't say that, because that sounds like you're taking time for granted, and that's never a given in the NFL, but I do think Lamar and the Ravens in general, it's a solid organization. They have what it takes to get back here. And it's not as if this is was a Goff-like performance from Lamar, where you're questioning, you know, you're at a fork in the road. That's not the case here, and it's not going to be the case for at least the next few years. So they'll have the opportunity to make things right. It's just, it's going to hurt for a year.
Yeah, and I want to make sure I made it very clear that I don't blame this game on Lamar. You know, missing Flowers is massive for them, but that's part of this, right? It's like, how many times have they taken a shot at receiver to get the receiver position right, and those players either aren't available or just don't come up, right? Rashad Bateman's another one who exited in the fourth quarter with an injury, right, and missed time. How different is this if those guys are healthy? You know, we keep saying what ifs. When is it? When did the stars align for Lamar, right? Because I think we all want that to happen. And you're right, too, about Josh Allen, right? It's great. This is a meaningful game for him. But until he beats Patrick Mahomes to get to the Super Bowl, it doesn't matter, right? Like, it's almost all for naught. Let's go to Philly and the Rams, where Landon Dickerson had a 94.0 grade, and the overall line was fantastic. The running game for the Eagles, just absolutely electric. Gainwell and Saquon were doing their thing. And it's great when you have somebody like Gainwell who can be that change of pace back and just step in and still be explosive. And he really was that. But Saquon was an absolute animal in this one. Stafford, right, off his game. It's funny that Stafford and Goff were the two guys that kind of blew it for their teams this week. But Stafford, 57.2 with four turnover-worthy plays. Those guys really did lose the game for their teams. Jalen Carter was a nightmare for him. Two sacks, one hit, four hurries. He was all over Matthew Stafford. But it was other guys as well. It was Cooper DeJean. It was Quinyon Mitchell. It was Zach Bond. Those guys all had very, very good game. Excited on the other side of the ball as well, though. Jared Verse, Brandon Fisk were nightmares as well. Three combined sacks, four hurries. Those guys were getting after the quarterback. I think if you're the Rams, you didn't expect this year to work out the way it did and get this deep into the playoffs. So it's all exciting for you at this point. And to see those young guys step up in a big way, I think you have a lot to be proud of.
Yeah, this was simply a game of just the better roster just sort of overwhelmed the lesser roster. And it's not even, when we say lesser, it's still a very good roster, as you pointed out, in LA. They're just a bit younger, a bit less seasoned. They need a bit more time, putting Matt Stafford aside in the quarterback position, given the veteran and his age there. But that's what it was. The Eagles roster, just from top to bottom, is the best in the league. And this is another instance of Jalen Hurts not playing a fantastic game. He made a few timely throws when needed, but by and large, another just ho-hum, not that great game from Hurts. And it doesn't matter, because the defensive line stepped up, was able to overwhelm the opponent. Saquon Barkley is an alien. He's always been an alien. And he's just, just took over. And even though the Eagles, in their best efforts, tried to make it interesting in the end, the talent won out. And that's really all there is to it. This is the most talented team. And now they're going to go up against another pretty dangerous opponent, right? I think at a high level, the profiles are kind of similar, even if the styles are different, in the sense that Washington is a dangerous opponent that could be pointsy, has a bit of a puncher's chance against you. But the strength of each roster, there's a difference there, a notable difference there, that the Eagles have the clear talent advantage overall at pretty much every level. So you could anticipate, again, that may be another scenario where the talent just overwhelms the opponent over time. It's what they've done their first two rounds of playoffs. And if they win it, it might be for that very same reason again against the Commanders next week. So not to get too far ahead, but again, just the talent was too much. And then you have an alien at running back that just closes the game out for you. And that's all there is to it. You're on mute, Chris. So I'm just going to say that Saquon Barkley once again is an alien. RB1.
Sorry about that. Thank you for that, Ray. That was a great review. But I also have to blame you a little bit for our next segment. And the reason we've kind of piecemealed this quarterback conversation is because it's been hard to tell who's staying in college and who is coming out, considering the groups of quarterbacks that we have. So while we did not review Jackson Dart yet, I think it does make sense at this time to do so, at least in a preliminary way. We've talked about it. We're going to do a film review of all of these quarterbacks at some point. We're not ready to do that yet, but we wanted to give a high-level kind of overview of the guys that we thought were relevant. And shout out to our friend John, who pointed out to me that Jackson Dart was going to be coming out, that I actually looked into it again after Ryu Ray told me that he was not coming out.
He was trying to go back to school, but NCAA had other plans.
Right. So I think we got to talk about him. I really do, because I did watch this guy and I think it's intriguing to say the least. Jackson Dart, for those of you that don't know, played at Ole Miss and played a year at USC as well. He's 6'2", 225 pounds, so exactly what you want in the stature of a quarterback, maybe a little shorter than your ideal size, but still really good size for him. He was a three-year starter at Ole Miss and played about a half a season at USC. 50 big-time throws and 23 turnover-worthy plays in the past two seasons combined. 11.9 ADOT, 19.2 pressure to sack rate, which is a little bit high. We've talked about that. And a 2.77 time to throw, which is actually the highest of his career. So for me, Ray, I'll jump into this first and I'll let you come in after. But the positives, right? This is a guy with one of the stronger arms in the college level. I think it is NFL strength at the very least. It could be not in that upper echelon, but maybe right outside of that. He's got the body to throw against pressure as well. Like I said, he's a thicker guy, so he tends to be able to stay in the pocket and take a little bit extra pressure because he's not afraid of contact. I do like that. And I think at the NFL level, we've seen that work with guys like Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels. It really, really helps at the next level. Even Will Levis, like I think some of Will Levis's positives come from the fact that he is that bigger bodied guy and can stay in the pocket and take pressure. Jackson Dart has solid ball placement. He does make NFL contested throws. Again, we talked about the difference of some of these guys. Some of them will throw college open. I think Jackson Dart does a really good job of throwing NFL open. So that's definitely a positive for him. He does have some escapability in the pocket. It's not perfect. It's not, you know, it's not Lamar-esque, but it is, you know, sufficient. And I think he has average NFL running ability. We're talking about that tier three running back, sorry, quarterback running ability, right? Outside of the Jaden Daniels, the Lamars, the Hurts, none of those guys, right? We're not talking about that. We're talking about maybe two spots down from there. Throws well over the middle of the field as well, which is definitely a positive when you're talking about guys translating to the next level. That being a strength of his definitely is eye-opening to me. But on the negative side, I think his throwing motion is long, right? We talk about how that invites pressure sometimes, right? His pressure to sack rate 9.2 kind of makes sense to me with how long it does take him to throw the ball. Guys like Caleb Williams, Lamar, Aaron Rodgers, they get that ball out in a half a second, right? That's not the kind of throwing motion this guy has. He's also pretty heavy legged in the pocket. It looks like he's kind of sitting there, right? He is moving, but it's slow. It's heavy. It doesn't look graceful in any way. In the offense that he was in, it was an easy offense for him. It had a lot of first reads as well. So, you know, this is a guy that I did see go through a progression and see the whole field, but he didn't have to do it all often. We saw Bo Nix, you know, it worked out for him this year, didn't seem to affect him, but that's not everybody. I would think about that before drafting this guy. Before I get into kind of the outcomes, Ray, I want you to go and give me your two cents on the guy.
I struggle with this because of the offense, and it's something that we've mentioned when it comes to Oregon, and this isn't the exact same offense or anything, but this is another one where it's hard sometimes to separate the offense from the prospect. He comes from a pretty pass-friendly system over there for Lane Kiffin. He has some good weapons, and things are a little bit easier, right? He can kind of play at a 100, 200 level quarterback as opposed to, you know, QB 401 in order to, you know, get the best results from his team, from his weapons, from his offense. So with that aside, it seems at times as if within the pocket, he's moving and he's not that short. Apparently he's 6'2". We'll see. He seems as if he's moving within the pocket to try to find better throwing lanes for himself, which makes me a little nervous. That's something you typically see with much smaller quarterbacks. And I'm not sure why, because you would think that's not necessarily an issue with him, but it's something that kind of jumps out of tape. Is it seems as if he's trying to find a throwing lane within the pocket as opposed to just making a progression and making the throw or the read. Not the fleetest of foot. You mentioned that, right? Kind of heavy legged in the pocket there, but can kind of have not catcher speed, but like build up speed as a quarterback. So that's what gets him, I guess, to the average NFL starter level athleticism, because initially acceleration wise, it's not the case. but he kind of has build up speed for a quarterback, which is weird because how often is he going to be able to build up speed? Probably not too often in the NFL, right? So that's the main concern, is just how exactly he's moving in the pocket and why. And will the ability to extend plays be as prevalent or as helpful in the pros as it is for him currently? But I think he layers throws pretty well over the middle with a good amount of touch, and has some snap to his throws. A little bit of a long motion there, like you mentioned as well, which again, those are the margins. Those are things that matter in the margins. But overall, I wrote someone who is toolsy enough to, in this class, rise above, you know, rise throughout the draft process on draft boards. And I mean, it wouldn't be the most unheard of thing for him to be in the mix as a first round quarterback, given this class and the potential need for teams at quarterback come this spring. So it's just another one that you kind of throw into the mix there, throw into the pile at quarterback in this year's draft class. And it might just be flavors of ice cream. There's plenty of reasons why the NFL team might not be sold on Shadur. There's plenty of reasons why a team might not be sold on Cam Ward. There's plenty of reasons why a team and a franchise might not be sold on Jackson Dart. But each of them have their own separate reasons that would intrigue a team enough to potentially take a chance on them. And given the low supply of quality options at the position in this class, they all could end up going in the first round. So I think he's a toolsy guy that I do want to study even a bit more, especially in the pocket. I want to look a bit more into that and just see if my impression changes at all, or what else I can sort of glean from that. But high level, you kind of throw him in the mix, and I could see him rising up draft boards to 2 months from now. We sit here January 21st, maybe on March 21st and April 21st. We're talking about him among the other 2 to 3 names of potential first round quarterbacks in this class, because everybody needs him, and he might have just enough tools to intrigue somebody to take him there.
So I think we're pretty close then on him, right? I have as my outcome, this is going to sound wildly crazy, but when you talk about the good games and the good tape that you see in the NFL of Gardner Minshew, or the one game of Linsanity that you got with Tommy Cutlets, right? Like that type of quarterback play where it's a little wild, but the arm looks good. He can make some special plays, a little bit of like a running ability, a little big play ability. Again, when those guys were at their best, I see that being kind of Jackson Dart's average, right? Like I think that he can get to the next level and be the best version of those guys. I don't know what that looks like really in terms of like successful NFL quarterback. Is that Jordan Love? Like, is that what that level of quarterback becomes when those guys hit their ceiling? I don't really know. But you know, you talked about in this draft, that's, you know, there's going to be conversations with a guy like this being in the first round. I think that's true. But if we were just going based on our draft board, our ranking, where we typically would see a player like this, I think for me, this is a guy that I would take a risk on legitimately in the second round. And saying that, I have him as my QB2 in this draft as of right now. I'm talking about Shadur being the number one. I think Shadur is still probably the only guy I confidently take in the first round and feel good about it. I think after that, like you said, there's a situation where a team might want to trade up and get a Dart in the first round. I probably wouldn't, but if he was there early second round, right? If you're the Giants and you decide to go Travis Hunter and with your second round pick, Jackson Dart is there, I think that makes a lot of sense. And there's a bunch of teams you can say that about, right? I think Vegas makes a lot of sense for Dart. Just talked about Gardner Minshew. If you could just get good Gardner Minshew all the time, that's what you have, right? Like that would make sense for you. But I have him above Dylan Gabriel. I have him above Cam Ward, guys I also see in that second to third round window. I like a guy like Jackson Dart more than I like a Quinn Ewers because of the frame, because of what I saw on tape, because of the arm and the ball placement and things like that. Like I just think the overall ceiling of the player looked to be a lot better on film than Quinn Ewers. At the end of the day, you can convince me. You could come up with 5 or 10 reasons why Quinn Ewers has the better outlook, could be the better NFL player. And I'd be like, yeah, maybe. But, you know, right now, sitting here in January, I'm taking Dart probably 8 times out of 10 over a guy like Quinn Ewers and definitely over Gabriel and Ward.
In a just world, he goes to the Titans or the Raiders on day two. But things get crazy and teams don't know how to draft. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Okay, so we're pretty caught up on quarterbacks now. I don't think there's anybody else that at this point is worth mentioning. Like, there's no other guys that I was waiting on to go back to school or come to the NFL. So I think we're good. Big news of the day, though, is really Ben Johnson, right? Ben Johnson, 38 years old, has been the Lions coordinator for 3 years, the offensive coordinator, but has some background, right? Grad assistant at BC for 3 years before going to the Miami Dolphins. He spent 7 seasons with the Dolphins, finished off being the wide receivers coach there his final year, then 6 years with the Lions, and again, the last three as offensive coordinator. According to PFF, when Ben Johnson was the offensive coordinator for the Lions, in 2022, they finished eighth in terms of overall offensive rating. Last year and this year, they finished second. So we're talking about a guy that's taken that Lions offense, taken a Jared Goff-led offense, and made it the second-best offense in the NFL in back-to-back years. We've been talking about him for a long time, waiting for him to kind of make a name out on his own and go take one of his head coaching jobs. I think, you know, teams probably looked at him and looked at what he did with Goff, right? The Rams got rid of Goff thinking he couldn't be enough, and the Lions kind of made him enough, at least in the regular season. We also look at guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was a late draft pick. We look at Sam Laporta, who I think was a second-round draft pick. Obviously, Penei Sewell was going to be great, but, you know, he moved him to the other side of the line and didn't miss a beat. We're talking about the development of potentially a top three receiver, a top five tight end, and maybe the number one tackle in the NFL, right? Those are things that are very attractive to teams. The Bears, they ranked 27th in offense in 2024, but 11th on defense. They obviously needed something in their offense to click. He's going to have to rely on a defensive coordinator to step up and keep that defense at that number 11 spot so that they can be competitive. But with guys like Caleb Williams, with DJ Moore, with Roma Dunze, with Darnell Wright and Braxton Jones, Cole Kmet, Darnell Swift, and then you have pick 10, there's a lot to like about that offense and the weapons that they have. When you say, let's insert Ben Johnson and his ideologies and the way that he's creative with his playbook into this offense with these weapons, it could be really special, right? I don't think it's absurd to think that Caleb Williams takes a huge step forward in year two under Ben Johnson. So I think this is a great hire for them. Ray, I'm sure you're upset because you wanted him for the Cowboys, but what do you think of the hire?
That was never going to happen. He had options and standards, and therefore it was never going to go to the Cowboys. I think one thing to know too is the Lions had some offensive line injuries late this season, and they still produced and put up a lot of points, even with some big issues at tackle after a couple of injuries there. So yes, they have overall a strong offensive line, but even when they kind of hit some bumps in the road, they still, Ben Johnson was able to manufacture and produce points and lots of them. And we've seen other offenses in the NFC North not be able to do that. Those that we like a lot, like the Vikings later on in the year. So I think it's easy to point to the weapons that Ben Johnson had in Detroit and sort of attribute a lot of the success to that. But they went through some issues too, and he just did a great job schematically in the run game in particular of overcoming that. So I think it's a phenomenal hire on paper, the proper profile for a franchise that finally has what they believe is their guy at quarterback in Caleb Williams. You kind of look at the parallels, right? You mentioned them. I think DJ Moore actually throws the football better than Jameson Williams, by the way. I'm going to say that as well. So if he brings that playback, I think it'll work out actually a little bit better. Yes, the offensive line is a little bit less, but that's why I wanted to make sure to mention that, hey, Detroit had some injuries on the offensive line this season, and they were still able to make things work, because that line on paper, all else equal, in Chicago is not what it was in Detroit. And Ben Johnson was still able to make things happen when Detroit was less than 100%. So I do have optimism that he'll still make it work without all of the pieces that he had in Detroit when he's in Chicago. So it's the right profile. The caveat is, of course, you never know with a head coach how things are going to work out. There's plenty of guys who are great coordinators. They get into that seat and things are just different. All right. You have to make much more decisions. You deal with a lot more during the week and on game day. And you know, it just doesn't translate the same. The same way that some coaches are better head coaches than they are coordinators. It's just the way it is. They're different jobs for a reason. So you never know. But on paper, when you're looking for the proper hire to help develop your franchise quarterback, this is the best hire the Bears could have possibly made. So I'm all for it. He's got enough weapons there to work with in Chicago with a better talent at quarterback. Caleb Williams is just more naturally talented and gifted than Jared Goff ever was. So if he could take that same development arc with Caleb that he did with Goff in his 3 years in Detroit, you're looking at, in the NFC, top two, perhaps just top two, not two, quarterback in the conference for years to come. So yeah, this is a window for the Bears. He chose the Bears as much as the Bears chose him. He had options. He could have went to Vegas. They had a lot of cap room. Tom Brady was trying to give him the pitch. But at the end of the day, he saw the franchise quarterback there in Chicago, the pieces that they have, and said, why not? He's familiar with that team, with that division, with this conference. So he knows what he's getting himself into. So when it comes to day one, new coach, you're as comfortable as you could possibly be without hiring a retread that comes with its own issues. So for a first-time head coach, I think it checks all the boxes, and it's exactly what you're looking for. Defensive staff and how that all shakes out is another thing entirely. But priority number one is getting that time to throw for Caleb down a little bit by giving him some better rhythm in offense and in play calling, and then building out from there because they have enough of a foundation to work with. So yeah, it's the easy choice, but it's a clear A+ for the Bears.
The hard thing with that is the Bears just historically have difficulty producing offense, right? Like it's just fact, right? And you think that, you know, all of these different offensive minded coaches that have come in and failed, right? Like at what point does the switch flip, right? I don't know if the Dome is going to be ready next year or the year after, but I like legitimately think that might be, like, if it's for this year, I think things look so different for the Bears and Ben Johnson. And I think that's why they're doing it, right? Like, I think the Bears just have had enough of not being able to have a 3,000-yard passer in the NFL. I'm sure Caleb did that this year, but I'm saying, like, having that next level quarterback, they're probably just so sick of it that they needed to put that Dome up in Chicago, even though it's not really what us as the fans want.
Yeah, that makes me sad. This construction is scheduled to begin this year. It's not going to be until 2028. So Caleb will be a grizzled vet at that point, and Johnson will either be one of the highest paid coaches in the league or fired by then. Well it's one of the two. They got plenty of time to figure it out before the Dome gets there, but we'll also blink, and that'll probably be here before we know it. So what'll that be, episode 409 or something?
Probably 600. Yeah. But how does this hiring change what they do at pick 10? I think, you know, the defense is strong, but you look at the offense and you say it has enough to be good, right? They've invested a lot in that offense. But to me, it's probably just offensive line, right? Offensive line, offensive line, offensive line. Make that their strength. Make sure Caleb is comfortable. You want him to get the ball out quicker, which I think is still important, but at least give him the option to have 2.5 seconds to get the ball out of his hands without having to move in the pocket. I think that goes a long way. I think it helps our running game too. That would be my suggestion, but what do you think they do at 10 now?
Ideally, it shouldn't change anything. And what it should do is, if Josh Simmons is on the board, we'll get to him in an episode here soon. Josh Simmons is there, the tackle from Ohio State. You draft him, you do what I've always wanted, which is kick Darnell right inside, where I think he profiles better anyway, even though he's been better than I think people have given him credit for the past couple of years, or at least this season in particular. And you continue to solidify that offensive line that way. But otherwise, offensive line is not really a strength in this class, where just because the need is there, you should reach in the top 10 for it, because there's not a top 10 guy at that spot otherwise. So it's either Simmons, if that knee is clear and the medicals check out, by all means, I think that'd be a great pick. Otherwise, don't reach. You're still the Bears. You still miss the playoffs. You're still picking in the top 10. So just take the best player available that kind of fits a good need for you, and don't force anything.
Okay. All right. Well, there are a ton of other coaching jobs open, right? We've talked about that. And there's a bunch of interviews going on right now. So, Ray, we're going to play a little game where I'm going to tell you the team and the leading coach or some of them. And we're going to say if it would be a good hire or a bad hire. If you want to give any reasoning, that's great too. We're going to start with the Jets, who are meeting with Aaron Glenn today. Aaron Glenn, again, defensive coordinator for the Lions the past few years. Good or bad hire if the Jets decide to pull the trigger?
It'd be a really good hire, but they also then need to nail the offensive coordinator, because you can't just let, if Aaron Rodgers comes back, just let him do what he wants to do with his boys, because that's what got you in trouble in the first place.
Okay. I think we're on the same page there. I going from defensive coordinator that was successful with the defense to going to another defensive coordinator that doesn't really have that offensive experience doesn't make a ton of sense to me, unless you can pair that with a really, really strong offensive coordinator candidate. I think Aaron Glenn would have to go into those interviews saying who that would be. So if that's the case and they feel really comfortable with that, I think it's a good hire. Okay, let's go to the Raiders, which is honestly, I think my favorite one so far. The Raiders, who missed out on Ben Johnson, have moved their target to Baltimore offensive coordinator Todd Monken. Obviously, that Baltimore offense has been absolutely electric the last few years. I really like that. If they could land Monken, I think that's an A-plus hire for them.
I don't think it's an A-plus hire for them if they do. And not necessarily because of Todd Monken, but because how are you going to make it work with him? Are you going to give him the groceries that he needs to actually cook a good meal? I'm not sure how you could do that, because you have a massive need at quarterback and you're working with this draft class. So you're going to give Todd Monken Cousins. I don't know. What do you do there? That helps. But to me, that's not an A+. So I'm not
Jalen
sure.
Jalen Milroe in the fourth round.
Yeah. Jalen Milroe in the first round. Fourth
round. I said,
sure. Yeah. Okay. Okay. A+, Jalen Milroe. Go have at it, please.
All right. So you're not a fan of the Todd Monken one just because of that offense and what it's missing. Let's go to Dallas, which is going to be a little close to home for you. There are a few names still being thrown around. Kellen Moore, Philadelphia offensive coordinator, believe got an interview. Don't know if he's gotten a second one. What do we think about the Kellen Moore if he was to be hired in Dallas?
The dynamics are so bad there, because he was in the building, you let him go, you kind of pushed him out the door and kind of weren't subtle about it. And he might be a better coordinator than head coach anyway. And when you have to, it takes a special kind of head coach anyway to deal with all the nonsense that takes place in that organization. I'm not sure Kellen Moore is the right guy for that. So that would be a no. Thumbs down.
Brian Schottenheimer, Dallas's current OC, I believe is the favorite right now to get the job. What do we think about him?
So I mentioned it a minute ago. There are some coaches who are better suited to be head coaches and offensive coordinators. That is likely Brian Schottenheimer from just people in the building. That's the sense and the impression. The problem is that wouldn't be the reason why he gets the job. He gets the job because that's Jerry going the cheap route. Someone he knows, someone that won't challenge him, because this option has no leverage, and it allows that organization to continue operating the way they have, which we see has not worked out. So I think in a vacuum, Brian Schottenheimer, not an A, maybe not a B or a B+, but I think it's better than your initial impression of it. But the dynamics in Dallas make virtually any option that they bring in a thumbs down, because they've already proven that the way they're operating doesn't work and they have no intention of changing that.
Okay. Last one for Dallas. The rumor I heard is that this is the leading candidate and it's the one that's most frightening to me, but Ron Rivera apparently has gotten multiple interviews and is the favorite to land the job. He is a defensive-minded head coach, has had several head coaching jobs, most recently with the Panthers, and was out after a very short period of time. Should we just say no and move on, save some breath?
It's like you just take Mike McCarthy and you just kind of flip it over, and like the other side of that coin is just Ron Rivera. It's like, he's a good coordinator 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and it's just run it back. He's had his opportunities and didn't get very far as a head coach, so yeah, we'll bring him in. It makes no sense. And I like Ron Rivera as a coach, but his days as a head coach should be over.
Okay. Saints are interviewing Giants offensive coordinator Mike Kafka and Miami defense coordinator Anthony Weaver. Neither, in my opinion, have had strong success at the coordinator positions that they're in. Saying that, like, you know, to your point, there might be guys out there that have better skill sets suited for head coaching than they do coordinator play. So what do you think?
They're going to have to get creative. And they're going to have to get creative. They're going to have to take an unorthodox swing for the fence to turn that around because the situation is not good. So I actually would favor the Kafka hire a bit more of those two because it's out the box. It might fail spectacularly, or you might be zagging when everyone is zigging here and, you know, get an under the radar guy that might do something for you. But you gotta do something a little unorthodox here because you got an old roster, you have no cash, or I should say no salary cap room really. And I know you're going to play with it to make it so and just put yourself further in debt cap wise, but it's a rough situation. So they're going to have to take some wild swings here. I think that's one of them. And so I'll favor Kafka.
Okay. And then the Jags last one here, head coach leader is Robert Saleh from the New York Jets. In my opinion, I think this is a really strong fit, just considering we talk about their defense all the time, and we're continuously saying that they need to draft pieces to continue to make that defense great. But when you look at it, they have a lot of top 10 picks in that defensive front, and it should be good. At this point, it should be good. And I think Saleh probably brings the most out of that defense. And if that's all you get from him, you know, that's a lot better than what it's been. So I think it would be good, but he also would probably look pretty cool in a Jags like coaching outfit. I think the colors would work for him.
That's what matters. Yeah.
But yeah. What do you think?
So he needed a fresh start from the Jets. The Jags needed a fresh start from Peterson. While it's not the freshest of starts because he's a previous head coach, I also kind of like the fit there and think he's exactly what that defense needs. And again, yes, they need it to an extent, but that Jags offense isn't wholly reliant upon getting a strong offensive coordinator in there. I just think it needs more of a fresh schematic view, adjustment, operation, whatever you want to call it, than what they've had so far. But they don't necessarily need to bring the best and brightest. You know, they don't need the Ben Johnson of the world in order for their head coaching hire to be a success, or, you know, the next Ben Johnson as an offensive coordinator for them to be a success. I think it's just a more modern operation overall will help them. And there's lots of names in the NFL today that can provide that for them while a culture driver like Robert Saleh is the head man. So I agree.
All right. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. If you haven't yet, please give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and X at @all22_PFF. And give us a review wherever you watch or listen to your podcast. Have a great rest of your day.